I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about historic preservation in Indianapolis. Our conversation will be spurred by two occasions. One of them, the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, and the airing of a new documentary on the TV side at WFYI called The Past and the Present, Historic Preservation in Indianapolis. My guests are David Baker of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission and Bill Brown, who is the commission president. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about historic preservation in Indianapolis. Our news hooks for the show are this is the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission. And to mark that occasion, WFYI on the TV side is airing a new documentary called The Past in the Present, Historic Preservation in Indianapolis. It airs at 7:30. Probably should do some disclosures here. It is a joint production of WFYI Public Media and the StatehouseFile.com, a news website powered by Franklin College journalism students. So I'm involved, obviously, on both sides of the operation there. And I also served as narrator, co-producer, and co-writer for the production. Just wanted to get that out there so that the audience does not think that we are holding anything back from them. My guests are two veterans of the program, also featured prominently in the documentary, David Baker of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission and Bill Brown, who is the commission's president. Good to have both of you here.
Oh, thanks, John.
Thank you.
Good to have you back. So I said somewhat jokingly to David, who Bill and David are among the select few who actually have seen this show before it aired tonight, what it was like seeing 35 years of his life and work boiled down to about a half an hour. What was the experience like for you, David?
Well, it was interesting. And having worked through this in the movement and with the Historic Preservation Commission for 33 years, it's to be able to see the fruits of your labor actually over a long period of time is very satisfying. So it's very interesting to see some of the early pictures and the later pictures, and to know and to have been able to experience the living through that.
Bill, how long have you been involved in historic preservation work?
Yeah, this is my I'm finishing my 26th year with the commission, and you know, as I reflect on the documentary that we saw, the thing that strikes me is, I remember, you know, being a young preservationist here in Indianapolis, and you know, starting to question, you know, some of the things that were being done, particularly around the Circle Center Mall project. And David and I were both directly involved with that project. And I just recall sort of the grassroots kind of movement that happened because of that project. And to this day, we can now look at the benefits of that early effort in our careers, and it's really heartening to see that kind of effort resulted in what I see as great value to our community today.
You know, and I don't want to steal too much from the documentary itself, but some of what we talk about is the transformation of the culture and the mindset here in Indianapolis, not just in Indianapolis, but elsewhere, from the point that, you know, 50 years ago or so, no one really gave a second thought to knocking down an old building. Now that question, even if it isn't always answered the way preservationists would like is inevitably asked as part of the discussion, which in itself is a huge, huge change. We talk a little bit, I'll start with you on this, Bill, about what produced that change in mindset.
Well, I think to some degree, it's some of these larger projects, you know, speaking about Indianapolis specifically, when people started sort of realizing the value that was being lost, I think, during the urban renewal times in the 60s and into the 70s, and then you started having governmental programs like the Tax Reform Act in the 70s that finally started bringing some financial benefit to the keeping of historic resources from a developer standpoint, all of a sudden there was a new attitude about, well, maybe I can actually make some money off of saving these historic buildings rather than just relying on people's sort of instinct of wanting to take care of these resources. So I look back at that time and really feel like that was a significant change to the mindset of the people who affect our urban environment from a real estate standpoint.
David, what do you think accounted for the change?
Well, what was just going through my mind was from a people standpoint, I think the general population back in the early days did not necessarily perceive historic preservation as a sort of natural thing that city mm-hmm. government should be doing. And there was great concern about whether or not adding protections in an area was going to actually damage people's property values and that sort of thing, make it difficult to develop and all of that. But over the years, it's just the opposite now. People tend to be surprised that we're not protecting a certain building or that it isn't because they assume it's going to be. And we almost never get people expressing concerns that historic district protection will harm property values. In fact, sometimes people are concerned that they're going to have to pay more taxes because the property values mm-hmm. are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that just the acceptance of preservation as a natural part of urban living is what has changed, that I've seen changed in 33 years.
When did you see that start to occur? Because, and we've talked about this in the past when you guys have been on the show before and when we've done other shows on historic preservation, you know, for those of us who are of a certain vintage, we can remember a time when historic preservationists were routinely dismissed as hysteric preservationists, and it was a real nasty caricature of them and their efforts, that they were sort of disconnected from reality and all of that sort of stuff. You don't hear that. You don't even hear that phrase, hysteric preservationist, anymore, and you certainly don't see that caricature. I'm always fascinated at, you know, not just that when things change, but the moments that they begin to change, what event it was or what combination of events that began to change that mindset. David, I'll start with you on that.
I would have to think that around the Circle Center development time had a lot to do with it, because the issues were in the news.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings that were being talked about, people knew and they saw them. And I think from my standpoint, I think I would pin that as kind of a time when the general population started to see that historic preservation is an issue that with the potential to shape the face and the character of a community.
Bill.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just thinking through things that occurred prior to the Circle Center Mall project, clearly there were the designations of, you know, the historic districts of Lockerbie Square and the Old North Side, and those were important moments for sure, but to some degree they were more isolated in a residential, you know, kind of area of the city. When Circle Center Mall came along, and this is, you know, what people may not know, it was before the Indianapolis Wholesale District was designated. And so it really was maybe one of the first opportunities that preservation was intersecting with commercial development. And it really, I think, as David said, it put it in the limelight in the community. And there was a lot of focus from the government, municipality, the city. There was a lot of focus from improving, the downtown with this big new development. Mm-hmm. There's going to be three city blocks and impact all these areas, provide new shopping opportunities. So there were things people could really relate to in a very common way. And so consequently, it brought that to the forefront. And I think after that, then people realized the benefits that came from that. And then it was like, well, they did that there. Why can't we do it over here? And since that time, the discussion actually, initially there were, I remember there were projects that followed that started talking about doing just the saving of facades mm-hmm. rather than whole buildings. And we've been able to move away from that. And now we're absolutely looking at taking care of entire buildings and in fact, entire districts of buildings.
I want to be inclusive in this conversation. I'm constantly reminded that that not everyone who listens to this program has lived in Indianapolis all of her or his life. There are people who weren't even born when this debate was going on. But, Bill, could you talk about, Circle Center Mall now is a fixture of downtown. But before it came online, what that part of the city was like?
The things that, pop out right away are, you had Block's department store, and then there was Wasson's department store and Ayers department store, and they were failing, if you will, and having a lot of struggle. The retail on the streets was almost, non-existent. There were very few restaurants. The King Cole restaurant was in the basement of the King Cole building. And, there wasn't the vibrancy that you see today. And what that project did is that through the preservation efforts, we were able to get greater vibrancy of the retail on the streetscape. We were able to then introduce an entire sort of mall space at the second and third level in the middle of the blocks that were basically relegated to alleyways, when the place prior to the mall. And so it did create some super blocks, which from an urban planning standpoint may not be the most desirable, but ultimately it really linked three blocks together, and I think in a very good way.
David, we've alluded to the fact that this was sort of a watershed moment in this discussion. Is kind of the thing that marks the before and after periods of historic preservation. What was the debate about at that time? What were the issues?
With Circle Center Mall?
With Circle Center Mall, yes.
It was mostly the issue. Well, one of the problems was that underneath the mall is parking, mm-hmm. which makes it very hard to save buildings on top. Mm-hmm. So buildings had to go. Mm-hmm. Or it was thought that that was the case. So some of the compromises on those were to save the facades of those mm-hmm. buildings. And a lot of people think that that's all that got mm-hmm. saved. But in fact, there was discussion early on about removing part of Ayers and mm-hmm. Buildings along Pennsylvania or Illinois Street, mm-hmm. all of which are saved as full buildings. Mm-hmm. So it's really both of those. But mostly it was mostly probably economic in that the city and the developer really didn't want to spend the money to do those things. But in the end, when they put all the advertising out there, the developer featured the historic buildings in the pictures. Mm-hmm. That was sort of satisfying. They somehow recognized that character of those buildings set the mold for the whole thing.
And really sort of defined downtown as we now think of it, right, Bill?
Yes. The other thing that comes to mind is the skywalks were such a big conversation at the time, ultimately resulting in the Arts Garden that is over the intersection of Illinois and Washington Street. But early on, they were looking for a number of skywalks, kind of crossing in odd kinds of places. And ultimately, that dialogue was able to be refocused and brought in, I think, the right way.
We are talking about historic preservation in Indianapolis in anticipation of the airing of a new documentary about the historic preservation movement called The Past and the Present, Historic Preservation in Indianapolis. My guests are David Baker of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, Bill Brown, who is the commission president. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the historic preservation movement in Indianapolis. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission. And to mark the occasion, WFYI is airing a new documentary this evening at 7:30 on the TV side, Channel 20, called The Past and the Present, Historic Preservation in Indianapolis. Full disclosure, it is a joint production of WFYI Public Media and the StatehouseFile.com. A news website powered by Franklin College journalism students, which I serve as the publisher for, and that I was the narrator, co-writer, and co-producer of the program. My guests are David Baker, who is with the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, and Bill Brown, who is the commission president. We've gotten a question from a listener named Cheryl, and if you want to reach out and join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Cheryl writes, "Can the guests talk about how preservation intersects, quite literally, with progress? I'm thinking about concerns with things like the Red Line, electric bus route, and similar efforts." I started with David last time, Bill, so I'll pick on you first this time.
Yeah, I think it's, these kinds of improvements in the urban environment always intersect preservation now. Now that people are aware of the importance of the historic resources that exist along, let's say, the Red Line. We're acutely aware of the conversations that happen as this Red Line has been planned in its route from, if you will, the north side to the south side. And there have been a lot of discussions about where it should go, where it shouldn't go. And some of that centers around, buildings, also around neighborhoods and how it's going to have an effect on that. So, to a certain extent, as that Red Line were to go through a historic district, there would be a need for those transit stations or whatnot to come before the Historic Preservation Commission. But probably a more current example that David and I have been dealing with is the Blue Indy stations, where they are, scattered all across the city, and a number of them have found their way into the historic districts, and we review that and have conversation with the group that's putting those in. So those kinds of infrastructure projects absolutely have an intersection point, and it's becoming more important as time has gone on. We're even getting into the place where we're talking about power poles and cell phone towers and these kinds of things, which you wouldn't necessarily think you'd spend a lot of time on. But when you start understanding that the historic district has a real character, these kinds of things can have an impact on that character.
Got another listener asked a question. What about Union Station, past, present, future? David, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, that's an interesting question. Of course, it started out as a festival marketplace, and that didn't succeed. Mm-mm. It was quite successful at one time. It did result, though, in saving the facility. And some people have suggested to me that maybe, well, it's not what it should be today, or it's not whatever. And, but I, in many ways, I think it's fine the way it is. It's fully utilized. What people call the Grand Hall, it's actually called the Head House mm-hmm. in railroad terms. From a preservation standpoint, it's a better use today than it was then because now it's open the way it was originally. Mm-hmm. So people can experience it more the way it was. The hotel part has been successful and continues to be there. I think it's got a completely positive, great future with the city. It's positioned. It's already shown that it can evolve as a space. And it probably will continue to evolve.
And I'd be remiss. Bill alluded to the role that tax policy and tax credits played in mm-hmm. historic preservation. That's one of the things that's on the block now.
Yes.
With the new tax reform bill that moved out of the Senate in the wee hours of Saturday morning.
Right.
So it's not even a week old, and I realize you haven't had a whole lot of time, either of you, to analyze this. But I'll start with David. I want to hear both of your thoughts on this. David, what is the level of concern there among the historic preservationists?
I would say pretty great. Indianapolis is a city that has it's definitely a different city today than it would have been if it hadn't been for those tax credits.
What things would have been? I'm sorry.
Any number of buildings have been restored because of it. The tax credits not only provide the economic assistance to help do that, but the requirements that it meets certain guidelines means that they are restored in a sensitive way, so that they're not just completely changed, but the historic character is respected. I think. It's going to be a great loss to the city if that goes away.
Right. Bill, same question.
Yeah, there's no doubt that this is a very serious issue. The hope is that from a preservation standpoint that the Senate bill, is able to be melded into the House bill because the Senate bill at least maintains the 20% tax credit. They do it over a 4-year period rather than all at once, 4 or 5 years, I may be mistaken on that. But even that would be beneficial to versus the House bill, which is completely eliminates it. Mm-hmm. As you asked, which buildings, there would have been numerous buildings, Harness Factory, the Century Building, the Circle Theater,
blocks.
The blocks, you just go on down the line. All of these buildings took advantage of the historic tax credits, and having been involved in a couple of them myself, I know for a fact that had those credits not been available, the project would not have happened, and it would not be redeveloped today. And so, I don't remember, and David, you might remember this specific statistic of a dollar invested versus a dollar gained economically. But it's 3-1 or 4-1, but it's significant,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge tool for economic development, these tax credits are. And so it really, as we understand it, it's being eliminated more from an ideological standpoint than from a practical standpoint, because if you looked at it just purely practically, you would never eliminate it. It's just the idea that ideologically they don't want the tax code to have any credits in it.
Mm-hmm. So you're monitoring this and hoping for a different kind of resolution. We are talking about historic preservation in Indianapolis in anticipation of a new documentary airing tonight on WFYI at 7:30. That's the TV side, called The Past and the Present, Historic Preservation in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Alex has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks a lot. I'm really
Certainly.
Enjoying the discussion today.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so, you know, today's discussion kind of hits home because I happen to own a historical building in downtown Franklin, and we purchased it a couple of years ago, and we're going through the process of doing some renovations where we placed a biotechnology company there, and we're in the, like I said, in the process of doing renovations, but trying to maintain the historical character of the building. What I've found, though, is while the city of Franklin has resources available to support that activity, what's available to the for-profit company that is trying to, you know, make these preservations and do these renovations to, you know, a historical building? What are, I know that there's a lot out there for nonprofit organizations like libraries and schools and courthouses, things like that. But is there anything other than, I'm aware of the tax credit, but on projects like mine, they're not as impactful as, you know, something larger would be. Is there anything out there for us to consider or to think about?
I'll see if we can get you an answer. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Alex.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, you know, the you mentioned the tax credits, and as long as you have a commercial property, those can qualify. And the scale of the project really isn't the issue for you. You have the opportunity to take advantage of that. The state of Indiana also has a similar tax credit program. The unfortunately, there's sort of a line of a waiting list, if you will. The state legislature has been funding that program not to the level that is fully needed, I should say, to fully fund it with what's in the queue. But that appears to be gaining a little bit of traction, and perhaps at the next full budget cycle, the state legislature may fund that to a different level. It's, at least that's what we're hoping. And there's obviously lobbying going on to try to convince them to do so, because, again, the benefits are so great. You know, those are the two primary areas that I know most private developers go to. There are some market tax credits that are available as well in certain kinds of development. But, you know, in generally, those are the tools that are available, are the different kinds of tax credit programs.
David, in terms of this, I'm sure that there have been studies about the economic impact of historic preservation efforts, you know, how they shape the development of a community, if not specifically to Indianapolis, regionally or nationally.
Yes. In fact, there's one being done right now for Indianapolis.
Yeah, I was queuing you up here.
and early next year, that I think will be finished and available. All the studies that I'm aware of and have ever seen, and I think the one that's being done of Indianapolis is going to show that historic preservation has a big economic impact, because the areas of the city with the historic buildings seem to be the ones where people want to go, particularly these days. Younger people are interested in neighborhoods that are walkable, that have character to them. And those happen to be the historic areas. Luckily, we've preserved a lot of that here in Indianapolis. So I think we are already benefiting economically because so much development has occurred in historic districts. A lot of people think it's difficult to develop in historic districts, but in fact, what's going on there proves otherwise. It's a tremendous amount of development has happened in our historic districts. We've probably added 1,000 housing units in the last 5 years, new development.
We are talking about historic preservation in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what William has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. William, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. This is a great topic. Thanks. I just wanted to bring up the name that was both of the panelists know, and that's Scott Keller. And, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, he's the guy that rolled up his sleeves and got going and using the tax credit for many, many buildings and inspired downtown living. And then the other thing I'd like to say is David Baker has been there for 50 years, and I'm just in awe of his staying power and how he does it. And he's accomplished so much in his 50 years working there at the commission. So I wanted to congratulate
him. He's wincing every time you say 50 years. I should say that. Thanks very much for the call and the question, William. I appreciate it. So, David, well, and you are there is a transition in your life coming up, right?
I appreciate his comments. It's 33 years. Yeah.
33 years, but you are getting ready to move on, right?
I am going to be retiring at the end of January, yes.
Okay. And what prompted the decision? Is it just time, or had you checked off everything you wanted to get done?
It's just time.
This is a milestone of sorts, because the commission has been in your hands for so long. Mm-hmm. What are the parts of that 33 years that give you the most satisfaction?
Well, funny, at lunch today, somebody asked me that very question. Mm-hmm. And I think when I became the administrator 30 years ago, the one thing I said to the selection committee that interviewed me was I wanted historic preservation to become an integral part of the community, of the city, of city government. I wanted to have a legitimate place at around the table of ideas. And I feel like that's happened. So to the extent that I've helped that to happen, I that gives me a great deal of satisfaction.
John, asking, you know, in some ways, David here to write his own eulogy. Probably, Bill, that question's more appropriately directed to you. What do you think David's impact has been, the places where he has made a difference?
Yeah, I think
efforts?
That David has a very steady hand on the rudder, would be a good way I would describe it. And the position that he holds requires a sort of deftness and care of needing to listen to the applicants and gently moving them in the right place if they're not really headed in the right direction. And also the ability of this position to sort of walk, if you will, the minefield of politics for various projects. And you have to have the right kind of attitude and mentality to be able to do that. And I think that David has really demonstrated over the years that I've had the opportunity to work with him, that he has that skill and that capability. And certainly, as we're looking to the next director, we're hoping for that very same trait to be realized.
And when do you anticipate naming a successor?
As I said at the commission meeting last evening, our goal is to identify that individual at the January 3rd meeting. Coming up here in a month,
so you're fast tracking it.
Yeah, now, relatively quickly. We have interviews coming up, and we're going to try to move through those quickly and make a decision. We've been working since David let us know that his retirement was imminent.
So, January 3rd is the time you anticipate. Noon. When would that person take?
February 1st, essentially. David, our goal is to have some overlap between the new person and David so that transition can be smooth. And then the first commission meeting in February, that individual would be in charge.
We are talking about the historic preservation movement in Indianapolis on No Limits today. In anticipation of the airing of a new documentary, The Past and the Present, Historic Preservation in Indianapolis, which marks, among other things, the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission. My guests are David Baker, who is administrator for the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, and Bill Brown, who is the commission president. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about historic preservation in Indianapolis. There is a new documentary about the historic preservation movement called The Past and the Present, Historic Preservation in Indianapolis, which marks, among other things, the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission. My guests are David Baker, who is director of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, and Bill Brown, who is commission president. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Kathy has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was inspired to call in by the caller that called from Franklin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is directly related, but it did help me retain a building's character. It wasn't exactly an historic building, but it was built in 1920. It was close to Fountain Square. I wanted to purchase it, and I needed help with some of the exterior. And I think it was the Indianapolis Community Foundation that put me in touch with the people that offered facade grants. And I wonder if the people that are on your panel today, if this is still in effect. It helped me as an individual with a business, for-profit business, try to retain a building that dated back to 1920, keep its original character. I got $10,000. They were giving away $100,000 a year. I believe I had to go to the historic preservation people too and work with the foundation, but $10,000 came my way that helped me keep that building looking good, and it helped the neighborhood. It was very close to Fountain Square. I wonder if the facade grant program is still in effect and if it might help other people like me preserve the buildings that have character, even if they're not over 100 years old.
Okay. David, I think I'll throw that one to you first. Thank you very much for the call and the question, Kathy.
Sure. Of course, we get questions all the time about where's the money that's available for historic preservation, and there's actually surprisingly little of it out there earmarked for it. I'm a little at a loss on this one. I think I don't really know about the facade grant program. I do think that sometimes community development corporations have done that. And if this, I believe she said Fountain Square area. So it could be, and I don't know when this was, but it could have been that they were offering facade grants of that nature. We're using community development block grant money.
Yeah.
Now, because it was in one of our protected districts, she would have had to come to us to get the approvals, and my staff would have worked with her on the design and things like that.
Is there a way, and this gives me a chance to give a little bit of encouragement to continue this conversation beyond the confines of this program, if somebody could research that and then post it on our Facebook page after the show, that would be great, because people actually – I'm amazed, after we go off the air, often the conversation continues on Facebook for quite a while after we finished up. So if you would not mind doing that, David,
I can,
or have someone
or
from
my
the staff
can look into whether or not these facade grants or some sort of thing like that still exists and who might be offering them, and I'll let you know.
Great. Thank you very much. Again, we're talking about historic development here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Connie has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Connie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have an interest in architectural design as well as in historic preservation, and I've really been concerned about the development on Mass Avenue. The design for the former fire station took a long time. I know the Historic Preservation Commission got them to back down on a little bit of the bling, but it's just in the process of being built. But the development for the Coke plant has gone forward before anyone even really understands what the three-dimensional elements of the fire station building are. And the Coke plant, I went to a hearing for it, and it was as if it was clearly above my pay grade. But because of these low interest rates, it's as if development has gone forward so fast, there's been no way to pay real attention to design as projects go forward.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'm going to throw that one to Bill first. Thank you, Connie.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Connie. To give you a little background on the Coca-Cola project, it's now known as the Bottle Works District. There were actually five separate special hearings that the Historic Preservation Commission conducted that were unique meetings, sort of mid-month, if you will, between our normal meetings that were devoted specifically just for the Bottle Works project. There was a tremendous amount of architectural material presented for this very large-scale development. That developer is also committed to come back to the Historic Preservation Commission at various successive stages of design to update the commission and to make them aware of the progress of the project. A project of that scale obviously has lots of elements to it, and so the commission staff is going to be overseeing and working closely with the developer. But there was a lot of public process with that project. That isn't to say that there's not going to be more discussion as it goes forward. But from a public standpoint, we really went out of our way to make sure that there was a lot of vetting and a lot of care given to reviewing that project. Also, speaking about what we saw as the Montage project, it's now called
Penrose.
In a similar manner, that project received a lot of scrutiny over a couple of years, actually. I think that any project that comes to the commission, our goal is to not design that. Our goal is to react to the design that's given to us, and we do the very best we can to try to suggest changes and adjustments to the design such that the applicant and the developer can ultimately receive approval from IHPC. And that project went through quite a bit of evolution, and honestly, looking forward to seeing the results of that dialogue.
Well, it probably is wise, and I think you can pick up what you want to add here. You know, what are the things that the commission looks at when people bring proposals to them? What criteria are established to saying yay or nay?
Oh,
David.
One of the things I wanted to sort of add to what Bill said was that before Bill and his fellow commission members actually see the design at a public hearing, my staff and I have probably worked with the developer for months ahead of time. On a project of that size, we did, certainly, so that the project that they see is sometimes very different than the one that walks in the door. So we work on the design a lot with the developer. And in both of those cases, the design changed. The design I first saw is very different than the design Bill saw. So our goal is to try to get the best possible design to meet the guidelines. We have guidelines in each one of our district, new construction guidelines, mm-hmm. and they are not prescriptive. They don't say you can only do this or something like that, but they talk about the general scale and mass. Mm-hmm. And they allow a flexibility in architectural style, which a lot of people don't understand. They think it's a historic district. It needs to look historic. But the buildings that are being built today are a product of today. Mm-hmm. And so we hope to get the best design we can. But as Bill said, we're not designing them. Mm-hmm. And we're not also in charge of the timing of when they come to us. And right now, for the last 5 years, new development's been coming to us very quickly. So I can see why in the public it looks like things are being rushed.
How much of this, Bill, and we've got more callers, so I don't want to belabor the point too long, but we talked about this. It's one of the pieces that didn't make it into the documentary. How much of this, the development of the historic preservation movement, holding on to these old buildings, actually began to shape the way even some of the new buildings look? too. Oh. I think of the field house as a very retro look. I'm not sure if historic preservation movement had not flowered here, that would have been the case.
Yeah, there's no question that the historic buildings create the context for the new construction. And there are obviously different varying opinions about how modern or how traditional, if you will, the new design of these buildings should be. And it varies from client to client and applicant to applicant. And so, consequently, again, we're not trying to set a stylistic direction, but we know that these historic buildings, you know, sort of establish a context that the developer, you know, works within. You take the Bottle Works District project, that particular developer has a very strong brand and architectural style identity, and they are bringing that and working that into the Art Deco buildings, but it's working in a very sort of complementary way, and that's ultimately what you want. And they're highlighting these historic buildings. One of the things I wanted to also mention is that the process that David just described of the staff reviewing things and the commission reviewing things on the Bottle Works project resulted in several of the historic buildings being saved in their totality rather than just portions of those buildings being saved. And the developer was very receptive to that and ultimately agreed. And so we're now saving, you know, virtually 95% of all these buildings. When they first came in, they were not doing that.
We are talking about historic preservation in Indianapolis in anticipation of the broadcast of a new documentary about the historic preservation movement in Indianapolis called The Past in the Present. It airs tonight at 7:30 on Channel 20. If you want to join the conversation, please do what Stephen has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Stephen, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I was wondering if your guest could expand on the plans for Riverside Park. It is the largest park in Indianapolis, and it was a very grand park in its day. And I understand that there are attentions being placed to do some major renovation there, and what part does the Preservation Society have to play in that? Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Stephen. Bill.
Yeah, the Riverside Park is obviously an important asset to the city of Indianapolis, and the city recently engaged to complete a master plan for that. It was a pretty involved public process that lasted almost an entire year of time, with a number of neighborhood meetings and workshops and the like. And the master plan is now rolling out, and they are looking at providing a lot of new facilities, looking at some consolidation of the golf courses, and really starting to really try to turn the park into a place where many, many people can participate in that very large green space. Most people don't realize that it's the scale of a Central Park in New York City, to give you a sense of size. And so it really has phenomenal potential, and the city is embracing it. And the plan, although it will take a number of years to realize, will have the opportunity to, I think, really connect back into the community in a much, much greater way. It certainly is a local park, but at the same time, it's almost a regional park because of its scale. The Heron Morton Charter School has decided to take over the Armory and create Riverside High School, and so that facility that was essentially abandoned, which is right in Riverside Park, is getting revitalized right now and will be the second high school for that charter program. And those are the kinds of things that are starting to occur and will continue to advance over the years ahead.
We're talking about historic preservation in Indianapolis. Art, you're on the air.
Yes. Pioneering is nothing new for Indianapolis. We've had pioneering efforts of all sorts for a long time. I mean, Luger did it back in the 60s and 70s. And that did it when he emphasized bringing venture capital into the city and making it vitalized. When David Burch came in from MIT and did the research that found Indianapolis had the highest rate of new business formation of its peer group of cities in the United States. But they needed infrastructure to keep them going. And then we stepped in and did that. And going back into the 19th century, Indianapolis had some of the earliest, foremost doctors, women doctors, who wrote medical textbooks, one of which was my great-grandmother. And it had been wood replaced, which was a piece of property they maintained for a long, long time. And had a holistic medicine practice that provided all kinds of holistic treatments of all sorts. People came all over the Midwest to Woodruff Place because they were pioneers in that field. And so Indianapolis has a lot of pioneering. These tax credits that help with all these properties are just a physical manifestation of that spirit. I think it's very important that we maintain that as much as we can and accent it and help the next generation continue to appreciate all of that pioneering spirit represents in terms of hard work, creativity, innovation, all the things that you can possibly think of.
Thanks, Art.
All that needs to be tied in.
Art, we're getting a little tight on time here. So
the tax credit.
Yeah, we're getting a little tight on time, and I want to give Bill and David a chance to respond to your points. But thank you very much for the call.
There's no question that, you know, the history of Indianapolis is very rich and full of, you know, just wonderful, wonderful stories. They talk about a golden age in the city and so forth. But, you know, and the tax credits are a component that can absolutely help with the preservation of our historic resources. And that's why it's so important that somehow get back into the tax code.
So we're getting close on time here, and I'm going to ask you guys to help me tease the documentary a little bit tonight. And I should emphasize, both Bill and David have prominent roles in the documentary, but they had not seen it until about a half an hour before we went on the air. What was the biggest surprise for you, Bill?
Well, I tell you, every time I see a movie that, you know, moves me emotionally, I know that it's accomplished what it needed to. And I can honestly say, John, that, you know, I think that you and your team and the children and the kids from Franklin College just did a fabulous job of capturing the emotion and the excitement and the results of our preservation here in Indianapolis.
Well, and I actually was trying to lead you guys back to Circle Center Mall because there's a little bit of a reveal in there, David. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, well, I know where you're.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say the biggest thing for me in that was, of course, and I have to say that I
gotta
really
appreciate.
Okay, I really appreciate Mayor Goldsmith expressing the recognition that historic preservation was actually a positive, because we all had trouble getting through that.
Thank you all for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.